Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, October 24th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's good to have you with us. On today's show, Alex Pierce from CBJ Parks and Rec will tell us about the Youth and Seniors Activities Survey. Lauren Anderson and Maggie Swanson will highlight Halloween activities at the Treadwell Ice Arena. We'll hear about New Member Month here at KTOO Public Media. Marta Lestefka will preview The Big Picture, a film about dyslexia, playing on Wednesday at the Gold Town. And Brenda Taylor will outline STEM activities at the Juneau Community Charter School. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here live and local on a Juneau afternoon, currently 41 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Organizers of a new coalition led by Alaska Native groups plan to set up their efforts on a variety of environmental issues. As Daisha Eaton reports, the group organized a protest last week in Anchorage outside the Alaska Federation of Natives annual convention.
The march was timed as Senator Lisa Murkowski was about to address AFN. Demonstrators held signs outside the convention protesting development of the Pebble Mine in Bristol Bay and opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge for oil and gas drilling. Bernadette Dementev from Fort Yukon, chair of the Gwich'in Steering Committee and one of the organizers of the protest, says the demonstration had a special focus on her people because Anwar is the calving grounds for a caribou herd, which is central to their diet and culture.
We're standing up for our future generations, for our food, for our land, and for our water.
Thursday, the U.S. Senate passed a budget resolution that could open part of Anwar to oil and gas drilling. Murkowski is chairman of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee and a longtime proponent of drilling in Anwar. She says the Senate's action is only the beginning of the process. She says any final decision on oil and gas development in the refuge will reflect what Alaskans say they want.
I have said very openly that, yes, we will consider Anwar. What we will do, we will do that through a hearing in the Energy Committee. So we have that opportunity, again, to bring in witnesses that are favorable and also witnesses that are opposed. That's what the process allows for.
Conservationists and Native people in Alaska are joining forces to fight big resource development projects being green-lighted by the Trump administration.
Our representative is no longer listening to us, and this is us standing up because nobody's going to protect our homelands but us.
Dementev is also helping organize a protest against the opening of Anwar, scheduled for Washington, D.C. this week. I'm Daisha Eaton.
A mile marker from the Dakota Access Pipeline campsite has been installed at the Smithsonian National Museum of the American Indian in Washington, D.C. Jim Kent has more.
The mile marker post was created by Hickory Edwards, an Onondaga tribal member from the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. Edwards canoed from his homeland in upstate New York to the Dakota Access Pipeline protest camp near Cannonball, North Dakota, in September 2016.
The first mile marker that went up was Onondaga, my homeland. 1,794 miles to home. People that were just walking by, I asked them, hey, would you like to put your nation down and how far it took you to travel?
The post was soon covered with dozens of mile markers from across the country. So many that there was no more room, and the markers were simply placed around the base of the post. Seeing the mile marker post as part of the nation-to-nation treaty exhibit makes Edwards feel honored. Kevin Gover is director of the Smithsonian National Museum of the American Indian.
One of the things we really want visitors to come away understanding is that many of these treaties remain in effect and that all Americans, both Native and non-Native, are the inheritors of this relationship between the Indian nations and the United States as expressed in these treaties.
Gover adds that many non-natives don't accept these treaties because they know they've all been broken and they believe that the United States would never break a real treaty. I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation.
funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Amerind Media Group, offering compelling and entertaining films, TV series, and documentaries about the indigenous peoples from around the world. We are honored to share their cultures, traditions, and stories online with a no-charge trial at nativeflix.com. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a June afternoon here on Tuesday, October 24th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. And joining me in the studio now is Alex Pierce. She is a project manager for CBJ Parks and Rec, and we're going to be talking about the Youth and Seniors Activity Survey. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Okay. So the Youth and Seniors Activity Survey, what is it and how did it come to be?
So we are in the middle of a master planning process for Parks and Rec. We're looking at the department's objectives over the next 10 to 20 years. And we went out to the public in the fall and asked a bunch of questions about how people use our programs, facilities, parks, trails, whatever. And as we've been working through the more technical inventory part of the project, we found that some of the answers that we received from the public weren't really specific enough for us to move forward with making any sort of plans. We'd asked some broad questions and received some broad answers, so now we're kind of dialing in on what people want to see in terms of youth and senior activities. People had said that they wanted to see more outdoor activities, after-school activities, and pre-kindergarten activities for youth, as well as more programs for seniors. So on our website at juno.org/parkrec, you can have a look at what we currently offer in all those capacities, and then take the survey and let us know what you would like to see.
Okay. So this is going to contribute to the master plan. And when is that expected to come out?
The master plan should be done sometime in early 2018. And we will be out to the public with a draft before it goes to the assembly for approval.
How often do we do master plans?
Well, supposedly we do them every 10 years. Every master plan that I've looked at says it should be updated every 5 years, and a new one should be done every 10 years, at least the ones we've historically done here in Juneau. But we tend to do them on about a 20-year interval. So our last one was done in 1996, and it's time to do a new one because Juneau and the way that we recreate here has changed since then.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so you're asking our public to go to this website, your website, and participate in the survey. I went there myself today, and it looked like it's pretty easy. You do have to sign in, mm-hmm. but once you get in, what kind of questions, what's the survey look like?
Well, there's an information page when you first log on and sign in, and there is a sign-in process, and that's so we can keep people connected to the topic and continue to update people over this long two-year planning process. And once you go there, register, you'll see some information about our current offerings. You can surf around and find some additional information about the master planning process itself. There's forums for discussion. There's lots of opportunities to engage with us online there. At the top of the page, there's a take survey button, and that asks what sorts of programs you would like to see. We have multiple choice questions as well as opportunities for open-ended answers, and we're really interested to see what people have to say, what specific programs they would like to see offered.
Okay. Will there also be an opportunity for in-person public testimony at some point?
There will during the public meeting phase of this process, which will, again, be with the draft plan.
Sure. Well, I hope you come back and tell us about those as well.
I will. Glad to.
Okay. Tell us again how to get to this survey.
Juno.org/parkrec, and it is right on the front of our front page. Just click on the map-looking iframe on our website.
And it's how our city can go forward with services for youth and seniors. Like you said, outdoor activities after school, pre-K even, you said, you heard it.
Yeah, well, we do. We currently offer Start Smart for pre-kindergarten kids for baseball, basketball, soccer, and general sports. But people have said they would like to see more activities, and there are a lot of different activities that could be offered in the community. So we'd really like some more specific feedback.
And if you could sort of plug this, you know, somebody might be thinking, oh, I don't have time to go do this. This form, how would you convince them that they should go do it?
It is 5 minutes that will make an impact on your community, especially if you yourself have children or are a senior.
All right.
Or are going to be a senior. We all are.
Alex, thank you for coming on the show. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yes. So switching to another Parks and Rec topic, Project Playground Steering Committee has requested that I plug the picket pickup this weekend on Saturday. People can come get the pickets that were not destroyed in the fire, and their website is goprojectplayground.org. And if people can go on there and look at the list and see if their personal picket survived the fire, and come get it if it has sentimental value to you. Also, we have basketball registration happening in November, and we're taking scholarship applications for youth activities as well.
All right. Alex, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
Down, hit the ground running, take a look around. You think you found your love, but you're standing in the pit. Oh, the pit, I fell in it, the pit. You fell in it, the pit. We all fell in that pit. Stuff it and mount it to your heart. Up in horsey heaven, here's the thing. You trade your legs for angels' wings, and when we've all said goodbye, you take a running leap and you learn to fly. Fly, fly, little Sebastian. Candles in the wind. Your 5,000 candles.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, October 24th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host, and in the studio now to talk about all kinds of fun Halloween stuff are Lauren Anderson and Maggie Swanson. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. Who should we start with, Lauren?
Yes. Hi. So Treadwell Arena is hosting our 15th annual Halloween skate, and it's Friday, October 27th, from 7:45 to 9:15. Regular admission applies, so that's adults are $7, youth are $6, and skate rental is included.
Costumes encouraged?
Absolutely. We're really excited. We're excited to decorate the arena, and it'll be a disco skate. It'll be nice and dark, and we want you to dress up. We'll have treats and tricks, and really looking forward to this annual event.
So that's this Friday night.
It is, yeah.
From when to when?
7:45 to 9:15. Regular admission applies.
Okay. And age restrictions?
No, all ages are welcome. We encourage everybody to dress up. We have all sorts of different costume contests, and you can win free passes to the rink to bring you back to skate.
Okay. All ages costume skate with prizes this Friday, 7:45 to 9:15.
That's right.
All right. What's next over on the island?
Over on the island on Saturday, we have the annual Ghost Walk. That will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Mount Jumbo Gym. The ages for the children are from 2 to 10. This year we have new games, so you all need to come over and check them all out. That's courtesy of the Carpenters Union Local 1281. They built all these great new games for us. And then the paint was donated by Valley Paint, and the artwork was done by Marty Bernardes. And she worked with Heather Ridgway and the Juno Douglas High School Art Club to paint all these great scenes on all these new games. So then we have prizes and treats. We have goodie bags for the children that include toothbrushes. And they have the goodie bags are for all the different prizes, both candy and non-candy prizes that they win at all of the different games that we have. We have the hockey team, the Juno Douglas hockey team, will be managing all the games for us and helping all of the children play with those. And I do have a couple of other notes. And some of our activities include the duck pond, fishing, putt-putt golf, ring toss. And this year we have something brand new in addition to the games. We have a button-making activity that is hosted by Sherry McDonald from Color Wheel Arts. She's a new little art studio in Douglas. And so she's going to be doing that with the kids so they all have a little picture to take home with them.
Okay, and so this all, is it all inside the gym, the Mount Douglas gym?
All inside Mount Jumbo Gym.
Wow. Wow, that's a lot of stuff. It must be a really fun atmosphere.
It's great, and it's decorated, and we encourage costumes for all. And we don't have a costume contest as such, but we love to see as many people come out for this event. And we had a lot of community participation and helping to put it on, and the thing that makes it a success is all of the people that come over and join us.
And Maggie, remind us who you work with and who organizes all
this. Okay, thank you. I'm with the Douglas 4th of July Committee, and we are working with the high school team in order to put this on for the community.
Okay, that looks like a lot of fun. That's 4 to 6, right, on Saturday.
Right, and you know, I did forget to mention, because the prizes and the candy event things were all donated as well, and that was donated by Office Plus and Costco, so we want to tell them thank you so much as well.
Okay, so we have Friday night and Saturday night covered. What else is going on?
Well, that about... Okay, I'm sorry. In addition to the toothbrushes that Dr. Gilbert's office has donated to our event for all of the children, they have a buyback program. He will buy back the candy for $2 a pound. So parents, when you see that big, huge pillowcase full of candy and you don't know what to do with it, give them a call. They have a Facebook page, and you can see that the candy is going to be donated to Operation Gratitude, which is for deployed troops and first responders. Last year, this national organization collected over 530,000 pounds of candy.
Wow. Wow. So I'm trying to think, which day will it be that kids do most of their trick-or-treating this year?
Next Tuesday.
Tuesday, right? Okay.
Yes.
And so they go out, fill up all these bags with candy, and then they take it to Dr. Gilbert's office after that? How's that work?
That's exactly right. On Wednesday, November 1st, and Thursday, November 2nd, from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., and then also on Friday from 7 a.m. to noon.
And the office will be $2 per pound of candy.
Exactly.
And then it's sent overseas.
Yes.
Sorry, I just have to wrap my head around all of this. It's a candy buyback.
They send it to the organization, and then the organization sends it out in goodie boxes that they have put together. It's not just the candy. They put other items in the boxes as well when they send them to the troops.
Wow. That's fun.
Mm-hmm. It's a good use for all that extra candy that you have sitting around that you don't really know what you want to do with or that you really don't want in your
After
house.
After you high grade all the good stuff out, you can.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We all have our favorites, right?
All right. So festivities start Friday night at the Treadwell, 7:45 to 9:15. Halloween costume skate with prizes. Anything else, Lauren, that you want to add to that?
No. You know, just come out, even if you're not an experienced skater or even if you're not a skater at all and want to come and check out the event. It's really fun, and you don't have to be a skater to come. We have a lot of different events going on throughout the year, not just our Halloween skate, for people to come, skating and non-skaters.
All right. Then on Saturday, 4 to 6 at the Mount Jumbo Gym. Sounds like a lot of fun. Maggie, anything you want to add to that?
I think that about covers it. We just look forward to seeing as many people as we can.
And then next week, bring your candy to Dr. Gilbert's office. He's up on 4th Street right across from Holy Trinity, right?
Exactly.
Yep, and then Mount Jumbo Gym is on 4th Street in Douglas.
Exactly. Oh, wow. Wow. Thanks, you two, for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
You like to see something strange?
Come with us and you will see. This is our town of Halloween.
This is Halloween. This is Halloween. Fun you'll scream in the middle of the night.
This is Halloween. Everybody make a scene. Trick or treat.
Tell your neighbors on the diaphragm.
It's so exciting.
Everybody's cool.
It's time for Halloween.
I am the one hiding under your bed. Teeth ground sharp and eyes glowing red.
I am the one hiding under your stairs. Fingers like snakes and spiders in my hair.
This is Halloween. This is Halloween. 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 Halloween.
In this town we call home. Everyone hail to the pumpkin song.
In this town, don't we love it now? Everybody's waiting for the next surprise.
Down that corner man hiding in the trash can. Something's waiting there to pounce and how you scream.
This is Halloween.
Red and black.
It's bloody green.
Aren't you scared?
Well, that's just fine.
We say it once, say it twice. Take a chance and roll a dice.
Ride with the moon in the dead of night.
Everybody scream. Everybody scream.
Flash and bubble to trace.
I am the who in the cold stare.
I am the wind blowing through your hair.
I am the shadow on the moon at night, filling your dreams to the brim with fright.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween. Halloween, 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 Halloween,
Halloween.
Our job.
But we're not mean
in our town of Halloween.
In this town,
don't we love it now?
Everyone's waiting for the next surprise.
Skeleton and Jack might catch you in the back and
scream like a bat. You make you jump out of your skin.
This is Halloween.
Everybody scream.
Put your knees back waiting for a very special guy.
Woman Jack is king of the pumpkin patch. Everyone hail to the pumpkin king.
Now this is Halloween.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Tuesday, October 24th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host, about 25 minutes past the top of the hour. And in the studio now is Marta Lestefka. She is going to tell us about The Big Picture. It's a film about dyslexia. It's going to be showing tomorrow night, 7 p.m. at the Gold Pound Theater. Marta, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about The Big Picture and how you found it.
Okay. So our family's been on a journey with dyslexia over the past 15 years, learning about it because we've just discovered that dyslexia runs in our family. Dyslexia is hereditary, and we just started identifying family members that have dyslexia. So we've been trying to get services for our son for many years and doing a lot of research. And our research led us to the Yale Center for Dyslexia and Creativity, which has been doing a tremendous amount of research in the past 15 years. And one of the most exciting things that they have learned is that in spite of dyslexic thinkers' struggle with school subjects, they have measurable inherent strengths like creative strengths, visual spatial strengths, entrepreneurial strengths, organizational, interpersonal. It's very exciting. So this movie was made by, I can't remember his first name, but it's Robert Redford's son, and it was inspired by his son who has dyslexia. So this movie interviews different rock star dyslexics like Charles Schwab and Richard Branson, as well as other adults, children, teenagers, and college students, and exploring those strengths and how they, what their struggles have been and what their successes have been.
So speaking of struggles, take us back, if I may ask, to your own personal journey through this. When did you start to realize that maybe someone in your family had dyslexia?
When my son was in kindergarten, he was in French immersion, so we didn't really have indication because everything was hard. But when we moved back to Juneau in first grade, we realized, shockingly, that he couldn't write his name. He didn't know all of his letters or his numbers. And we were shocked because he was so smart. And everybody's child's smart. But we knew he was really smart and really creative. So the fact that he didn't know these things that we thought he knew, and at one time maybe he knew them, but he forgot them, was a puzzle. And it was a puzzle for us. It was a puzzle for his teacher. That started us on the journey. The amazing thing is that he was pretty much a classic dyslexic. Dyslexics have a tendency to learn and then unlearn. There's a ratio of, like, for what it takes a kind of conventional learner an hour to learn, it takes a dyslexic person 10 hours. Repetition is really important. So at the time, it sounded crazy, but what we've learned is that it's kind of classic. He loved stories and he loved narratives, and we just knew instinctively he would read. He would be a reader and he would love it, and he does now, but it was a very, very long journey. He didn't start reading until he was in fifth grade, and now, because of enormous amount of work on his part, he's reading post-high school level, and he's 15, so he's doing great. But that's not the whole picture for dyslexia. Dyslexia is kind of an umbrella term for specific struggles. There's dyslexia, dyscalculia, and dysgraphia, reading, writing, and math struggles.
Sort of like a spectrum, I imagine.
Yes, and everybody that has dyslexia has it differently. So one in five of us have some degree, but it could be very slight.
What did that mean for you to get a diagnosis or to finally know?
It took us such a long time to get a diagnosis because there was a lot of ignorance within the district. We were told he was lazy, which we knew he wasn't. We were told dyslexia didn't exist after I had done research and said, I really think he has dyslexia, and that's not true either. So it was really fighting the district, which we also trusted, so that took us a while. I don't want to badmouth the district, but it's very common. It's not only Juneau, it's everywhere. So that was the most painful part of the journey, is finally getting him a diagnosis, which was very difficult because we had to fly to Seattle. We had to pay a lot of money for a professional to diagnose him. And then even still with his diagnosis, it's only been a year since school districts in America have been using the word dyslexia, and they were forced to, encouraged to, by President Obama in October a year ago, as part of the READ Act and part of just transparency. The problem is there's a reluctance to serve people with dyslexia, and if you say the word, then a district is obligated to serve the child.
Okay. And this movie, The Big Picture, seems like part of maybe an awakening in a sense?
Yes, it's all because it's pretty recent research, so it's very exciting. Now, dyslexia absolutely exists. You can have an MRI and have it determined, but it can be determined with simple testing as well. And it's what's exciting to me is that what's hard about dyslexia is school. School is what's hard for dyslexics. If they can just make it out of school, they can have a very rich life as long as their self-esteem is intact. And that's part of what this movie celebrates, is that dyslexic thinkers are just different thinkers. They have a lot of other strengths, and if we have to help dispel that stigma and let kids shine.
Have you met fellow advocates or parents in the community that are going through the same challenges as you?
Yes, and we have an informal group called Juno Dyslexia, and we're sponsoring this movie tomorrow at the Goldtown Nickelodeon with generous contribution from Goldtown Nickelodeon.
So it's at 7 p.m. You'll screen the film. What else can people expect?
Well, the movie is really only an hour, and then we'll have an informal discussion afterwards. I've invited some local celebrity dyslexics, who I'm not going to say who they are, but you may be surprised who is blessed with this condition.
Because like you say, and I watched the preview for the film today, that it's often also an indicator that maybe there's some creativity involved.
Yes.
In people's lives.
Yeah. I mean, Wally Hickel, our governor, was highly dyslexic. I can't remember this guy's name, but the guy that created the biggest building in Dubai, he's severely dyslexic. Spatial reasoning is a very common strength for dyslexia people.
If there is a person listening out there, what advice would you give to them, maybe a person who maybe has a child that they suspect might be dyslexic?
I think a great place to start is to go to the Yale Center for Dyslexia and Creativity website. It's a wealth. It's a very deep well of information, links to other information. Dyslexia International and the Dyslexic Advantage are all great websites. Locally, they can find our group on Facebook, Juno Dyslexia.
Or they can come meet you tomorrow night.
Absolutely.
At 7 p.m. All right, Marta Lestefka, thank you so much for coming on the show. She'll be part of the screening of The Big Picture tomorrow night, Wednesday, at the Goldtown Theater in downtown Juno. Anything else you want to add, Marta?
No, that's great. Thanks, Scott.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This is Bird Note.
You've got a friend in me. You've got a friend in me.
Many birds that forage in open country benefit from association with large grazing mammals. The big mammals scare up insects as they move, making them more visible to the birds. Cattle egrets are among the most obvious of these birds. These small white herons with yellow bills are so often found with these large mammals that you could think of them as friends.
You got a friend in me.
Cattle egrets in their native lands in Africa feed with elephants and rhinos and Cape buffaloes. But they've become established widely in the Americas, and here they associate with cattle and horses. A cow grazing in a pasture or a buffalo moving over the African savanna kicks up one grasshopper after another, and these egrets walk right at their feet, darting out to capture each one as it flushes. Sharp-eyed as the egrets are, they have trouble seeing the well-camouflaged grasshoppers until they move. Get BirdNote whenever you want when you sign up for our podcast at birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
You got a friend in me.
You are listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, October 4th, about 25 minutes until the top of the hour.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 24th of October, 2017. It's the birthday of the writer Sarah Josepha Hale, Newport, New Hampshire, 1788, who campaigned for a national holiday called Thanksgiving, wrote letters to one president after another, until finally, in 1863, Abraham Lincoln listened to her. She was also the author of the poem Mary Had a Little Lamb. 1938, on this date, the Fair Labor Standards Act went into effect, which established the 40-hour work week and a minimum wage, which at the time was 25 cents per hour. It's the birthday of Antoni van Leeuwenhoek, born in Delft in the Netherlands, 1632, who perfected the microscope. Though he was not a scientist, he was a haberdasher, but his hobby was grinding glass lenses. And with the microscope that he made, he became the first person to see bacteria and protozoa and to figure out how they reproduced, and also to see red blood cells. And it's the birthday of the playwright Moss Hart, New York City, 1904, author of many plays, including You Can't Take It With You, a play about the strange Sycamore family, with their home full of snakes and ballet dancing and Russian royalty and fireworks, still one of the most popular plays produced. It's the birthday of the poet Denise Levertov, Ilford, England, 1923. She wanted to become a poet, didn't want to go to graduate school, so she got her nurse's training, spent 3 years as a nurse during the Blitz in London. She liked the work, but didn't like the structure, the organization. She said, "I was always crawling in and out of windows to avoid curfews." She met and married an American poet, Mitchell Goodman. They moved to this country. She got in touch with William Carlos Williams, whose work she admired. They exchanged letters for a while, then she took a bus up to meet him in Rutherford, New Jersey. He was a warm man, and after that, she went to visit him a couple of times a year. Denise Levertov published more than 20 books of poems. Denise Levertov, who said, "Strength of feeling, reverence for mystery, and clarity of intellect must be kept in balance with one another. Neither the passive nor the active must dominate. They must work in conjunction as in a marriage." She said, "I'm not very good at praying, but what I experience when I'm writing a poem is close to prayer." Here's a poem by Billy Collins. 16 years old, I help bring in the hay on my Uncle John's farm with two French-Canadian workers. None of us expected the massing thunderheads to swing open their doors so suddenly that we would have to drop our rakes and run across the field to a shelter and stand there side by side under its tin roof, looking out through a shiny curtain of rain. We had never spent any time together, except for the haying, raking it into piles and pitchforking it up into an old truck, but now there was nothing to do but watch and listen to the downpour, and nothing to say, either, after the cigarettes had been offered around and lit one by one with the flame of a single match. A poem by Billy Collins, 16 years old, I help bring in the hay on my Uncle John's farm with two French-Canadian workers, from his collection The Rain in Portugal, published by Random House and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Home Advisor, matching homeowners with background-checked professionals for home projects from minor repairs to major remodels. See homeowner reviews, compare prices, and book appointments at homeadvisor.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, October 24th, 20 minutes until the top of the hour. In the studio now is Brenda Taylor. She's the co-chair of the Juno STEM Coalition, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics. Is that right, Brenda?
That is it.
And we're here for a little bit of an update on what's going on. How are you?
I'm pretty well, thanks.
Okay, it's nice to have you on the show. Maybe some of our listeners haven't heard about what the STEM Coalition is. Can you outline that for us?
Sure. The STEM Coalition is a group of it's a voluntary group of members from the community who want to basically increase more STEM experiences for more Juno kids. And we meet monthly. We are representatives of scientists and technology people and engineers and mathematicians from lots of different organizations who are trying to get together and figure out how to make that happen.
And basically getting professionals into the classrooms to share their knowledge with teachers and students?
That's one piece of it, right?
Okay.
So in terms of increasing STEM experiences, more professional development for students, maybe more after-school experiences at Cedar Park would be a great thing, maybe more money and more materials. But the thing I've talked to you more specifically about is how do we get community members into our classrooms and community members who have that specific STEM experience, and whether they're professionals like scientists and engineers and mathematicians, or they're professional carpenters and electricians who use those STEM subjects in their work every day, or they are Tlingit cultural bearers who understand the history of understanding the natural world here for the last 10,000 years and how salmon and trees connect, for instance. So when we're saying STEM community members, we mean all that very broad group of people.
And I understand you just had a very successful gathering.
We had a great event last Tuesday from 5 to 7 at the Jack. We had 150 people come. That was about half teachers and half community members. And we had a meet and geek bingo where we had teachers find community members and community members find teachers, and they had color-coded bingo cards, and the one complaint that I heard about that was that they didn't have enough time to talk to each other until they went to find another person. And then we gave them sort of like a speed dating, but we called it connecting time for them to be able to, we'd have a group of community members and a group of teachers and say, you've got 10 minutes to introduce yourselves, say what you have to offer or what you'd like if you're a teacher. After that 10 minutes, the bell goes and the teachers move on to another table.
Did you find any themes emerging, any desires for any specific professionals to come in, or is it all over the boards?
I would say it's definitely all over the board. In the feedback that we've gotten from teachers so far, there was a math teacher saying she wished that there had been more about statistics, and she was looking for a statistician to come into her room. She was looking for coding people to come and work with her freshmen who were doing coding. I wish I could remember more of the details, but there were teachers saying, this was really great, and now this is what I'd like. Could we do this? Could we do that? There were people who were looking for panel discussions, like they'd like to have an array of healthcare professionals or an array of people talking about fisheries. So we are really excited about the possibilities of where do we go next. There's the possibility of having a similar event really soon and doing it again, getting the word out to more people. As long as we, I think, include the beer and the pizza, that was key. And we had really great door prizes from so many sponsors. It was just a fun place to be and a relaxing event.
Seems like it would be really, well, obviously enjoyable for the students and the teachers, but thinking about professionals who maybe spend most of their time in one environment, to get out into the classroom and share their knowledge, it seems like it'd be really fulfilling.
So what I heard was not only was it fulfilling, like I think Jordan Watson was explaining that he spends actually a lot of his time now as a scientist in front of a computer. And so, like you were saying, being able to be with some kids makes him remember, oh, yeah, remember when I got to go to the Arctic and I got to do this thing with the icebergs or whatever. So that's that's exciting for him. Another scientist whom I spoke with said that she really wants to be able to have that opportunity to have to get better at communicating her science. So she's really looking for these sorts of experiences to make her a better scientist, actually. So that was really exciting, people seeing this not just as, oh, I'm doing it because I want to give back to the community, but I see something in it for me. So it was really felt like a win-win for lots of people.
Okay, so the Juno STEM Coalition is growing and gaining momentum. What's next?
So then the next thing that we have is an official, we're calling it the first annual community summit, and that's Monday, November 13th from 5 to 7 at the JDHS Commons. And that is when we are officially saying, okay, here we are, the Juno STEM Coalition. We're going to have a few speakers, Doug DeMaster, Jennifer Thompson, and Anthony Malott, and have them set the stage for us a little bit about what's going on with STEM, why do we need STEM workers, what do we mean by STEM education. And then we'll talk about, so how do we make that happen? Here are the ideas that the STEM Coalition has had so far, and here's what we've been working on. Are those good ideas or not? Are there better ideas? Are there people who've got, you know, ways that they want to work with us? So basically speakers and then really lots of time to brainstorm ideas and roundtables. So we're really looking for community members who'd like to come and give theoretical as well as practical input on STEM.
Remind us when and where that is?
November 13th, that's a Monday, from 5 to 7 at JDHS Commons.
Where's the best place to find the Juno STEM Coalition online?
JunoSTEM.org.
Okay.
And JunoSTEMCoalition@gmail.com works really well as well.
All right, Brenda. Is there anything else you want to share with our audience today?
I just want to do the sneak peek that I'm sorry that Christy Dillingham couldn't be here. She's the principal at Mendenhall River, and they actually have a 0.25 STEM specialist this year. And so she was going to come in and explain how that's working, which is a pretty exciting idea about how do you get more STEM for more kids.
Yeah, next time. All right. Thanks for coming on the show, Brenda.
Thank you.
From my heart and from my hand, why don't people understand my intention? We'll be right back.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday. It's about 8 minutes till the top of the hour. You may be aware of our Curious Juno here at KTOO. It's an opportunity for our listeners to ask a news reporter a question that they may have been curious about for a long time. And actually, one of our very own had a question. Skip Gray asked Andrew Kitchenman, or asked our newsroom, about the history of the Quonset huts out at Mall Way and Atland Drive. If you didn't know about them like me, you might enjoy this story right here.
What's the history behind the Quonset huts at Mall Way and Atland Drive?
That's Skip Gray, who asked the question for this Curious Juno. I'm Andrew Kitchenman with KTOO. And over the course of trying to answer Skip's question, I found out about not just Quonset huts, but also the history of World War II in Juneau. If you've driven on Mendenhall Loop Road, you may have seen the huts. The rusted steel half circles look a bit like mini airplane hangars. I didn't know much about Quonset huts, so I called Julie Decker. She's the director of the Anchorage Museum. She also co-edited the book Quonset Hut, Metal Living for a Modern Age.
If someone had never heard of a Quonset hut, how would you describe it to them?
The Quonset hut is a temporary structure born of war and expediency and ended up becoming a permanent fixture on our landscape.
The huts were named after Quonset Point, Rhode Island, near where they were first built at a naval air station. The military developed them at the start of World War II as solid, inexpensive structures that were easy to ship and build. They were used around the world as places for soldiers to eat, sleep, work, and heal. Decker says that after the war, the military and local governments, including Anchorage, had to decide what to do with them. Many were sold off.
They tried everything from banning Quonset huts from our downtown to using them for railroad housing.
They remain more common in Alaska than they were in other places after the war. Many of the modest structures became houses. I told Decker about one in Juneau's quirky Star Hill neighborhood. It's listed at nearly $200,000.
You're kidding!
No.
Skip gave me a lead that led to Mary Lou Spartz. She's a spry 86-year-old who has vivid memories of growing up in Juneau during World War II.
It was intended to be a big base, and it was camouflaged from the road, so we never saw any of it.
Like other civilians, Mary Lou wasn't allowed on the post, but she remembers there was a full hospital on it.
The thinking was that there was a major invasion of Alaska, and there were wounded, and people had to be brought somewhere. They would come here for medical attention.
Mary Lou says some Juneau residents were worried that the Japanese military would invade the city.
We just didn't have any idea, you know, as you understand, we're close enough so it wouldn't have been that hard.
I stopped by the Juneau Douglas City Museum to see if they had any information on the huts. The staff found this description of the Army post written during the war. Commanding Officer Lieutenant Colonel Roy Regal gives you a sense of his personality from his report. He proudly writes that the post didn't have a single case of venereal disease. When the soldiers left their Quonset huts, Regal ordered them not to visit the legal brothels on South Franklin Street. The Army post covered 500 acres along what is now Mendenhall Loop Road. It housed 2,000 soldiers, more than a third of the city's entire population before the war. I met a librarian at the Alaska State Library. She remembered an oral history interview she did with Gus Moore. He died in 2016. Moore was a sergeant who arrived in Juneau about a week after the attack on Pearl Harbor. He and the other soldiers slept in tents the first winter.
I'll be home for Christmas.
Then the pieces of the Quonset huts arrived. He said the soldiers ate well, including the food they got from fishing and hunting.
We shot bear. Bear meat's pretty stinky, but deer is pretty good. So we had all fresh food and everything like that.
After the war, the Forest Service used the huts to store firewood and as a space to paint signs and benches. Fast forward to 2010. Developer Richard Harris bought the huts. To find out what's happening in them these days, I called Harris's office. The person who answered the phone says one's being used as a paint shop. While the huts may not have much of a future, they've had an interesting past. For Curious Juno, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
If you have a Curious Juno question, you can go to ktoo.org, then click on Listen, and click on Curious Juno, and send us your question. Let's take a look at the lineup for tomorrow. Shelley Delaney will be your host here on a Juno Afternoon. We'll hear about the League of Women Voters event, Unmask the Vote. The Juno Community Band's Todd Hunt and company will be here to let us know what's going on with them. We'll hear about the photography workshop at Kindred Post, and author Janet Collins will preview the talk at the library coming up. Taking a look at the weather, it's currently 41 degrees and overcast here in the capital city. Tonight's forecast calls for a 10% chance of showers before 7. And looking to tomorrow, Wednesday, rain is likely mainly after 4 p.m. with some patchy fog in the morning. And looking at Thursday, rain, high near 44. And Friday looks like rain as well. And just a chance of rain into the weekend. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.